Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this year's Radio Day, which is the 32nd in a row since 1978. We have compiled an interesting program, which we would like to introduce to you.
Ingo Paternoster will be starting with his AFN presentation in a few minutes, followed by Kees Kuus, the well-known radio presenter who celebrated not only his 70th birthday, but also his 50 years on the radio in 2009. Kees has been our guest in Utrecht in 1994, 15 years ago, where he came up with his book Pop Went the Pirates, which immediately became a sort of offshore radio Bible. Today, Kees is proud to present the second edition of the book, and we are proud as well that Steve will be interviewed by the Dutch radio legend Tom Mulder. Excuse, of course.
Talking of books, this year, 2009, seems to be the year of new offshore radio books. Nigel Harris will be here to present his new book, Ships in Troubled Waters. And Bob Noakes has published the second edition of his bestseller, Last of the Pirates. Last but not least, Steve Conway surprised us with his new book, Shipwrecked. Steve Conway will be our guest today, and he will be interviewed maybe by Johnny Lewis, because we have a slight problem, which we'll tell you right now.
Yeah, it has been 25 years ago that Laser 558 started its transmissions in 1984. Today we will have a Laser reunion, which would be hosted by Paul Alexander Rusling, but Paul Alexander phoned us yesterday evening, late in the evening, that he can't come to Holland due to the fact his mother is very ill. So we are looking for a replacement. Later on, more about that. You can look forward to people like Jesse Brandon, Paul Jackson, Jim Perry, and a famous ship pet called the Sea Wolf. In fact, it's Charlie Wolf who will be telling us about the exciting days of Euroseats 85.
And during the last 12 months, we have written countless emails to invite as many former Laser people as possible. And these following were the ones who unfortunately have sent us negative replies, but also sent many good wishes for all Laser fans and for us all here at the Radio Day.
First of all, Tommy Rivers. Unfortunately, I won't be making it, but have fun. All the best, Tommy.
Rick Harris, I'm flattered that after 25 years there are people that remember and care about the Laser Radio crew and our programs. I'm grateful for the invitation to participate and apologize that I can't make the time for it. I hope that you have a good turnout of DJs, supporters and listeners.
Janelle Panula, thank you for all your hard work on the event. I'm looking forward to viewing photos that you post online. Sincerely, Jonelle.
John Catlett, I'm sorry to tell you that I've been informed by my doctors that I won't be able to travel outside New York following my knee surgery for at least six weeks, so that precludes my being able to attend your Laser anniversary event on November 14th. I'm sorry to miss it, but I wish you well and hope to be able to feed some information and photographs of the event afterwards on the internet.
Then we have D.L. Bogert. I'm sorry to inform you all that I will be unable to attend Radio Day 2009 as I had originally planned. This email came in just a couple of days ago. I've been experiencing a chronic medical issue this year and it has taken a turn for the worse over the past 3 months. I won't bore you with details, but my doctor and his consultants have strongly recommended me that I refrain from long air flights until we can whip the thing into submission. Have one of the Americans pick me up on Sunday Sport, won't you? D.L. Bogert, Europe's most illegible bachelor, Laser Hot Hitch 576.
And then Brandy Lee. Attending this event is ever in the back of my mind. I have recently decided to return to the university to complete my left unfinished in 1980 to pursue a radio job degree. However, and unless money falls from the sky where I live, I can't justify the expense of traveling to Amsterdam. I'm truly sorry to say, Greet my friends and former shipmates for me, please.
Dan Blake Williams. Thank you for the invitation to join the folks of Laser for the reunion. As much as I would like to attend, I doubt if I can make it. I currently have too many irons on the fire to commit to being away this fall. Between voice-over work, involvement in the film industry, construction of a new FM station, and another project I've been working with for the past 4 years, I seriously doubt I can get away. I would like to see everyone and get caught up on what's happening in life after Laser. What I can do is send a record message to everyone, if that would be acceptable. I truly appreciate the efforts of everyone to pull things together, and I hope all goes as planned. Thank you again, and please let me know if there's anything I can do to help.
I fear that the recorded message is on Paul Rusling's PC, but Paul Rusling won't be here. Jeff Davis, thank you so much for checking in and inviting me to the Laser 558 reunion. Much as I'd like to go, the cost is hard to justify. I'm glad to see quite a few are going, including Leendert Fingerling. I emailed him a while back and he wasn't sure, but sounds like he might, and he will be, I can say. I hope it all goes well, and I look forward to making it back to the Netherlands someday. I went back and visited Lane and Mario in 69. That was quite a fun trip, and I would love to spend more time there. Thanks again and including me in the invitation. Jeff Davis.
Then we have Bill Reed, who wrote, sorry, it's taken me so long to confirm. Unfortunately, responsibilities at home prevent me from attending this year. Have a great reunion and say hi to Ray Anderson and John Catlett for me. Bill.
Andrew Turner, thank you very much for including me on your invitation list for the reunion. However, I will not be attending. I hope it goes well. All the best, Andrew.
KC wrote, oh, as much as I would love to be there, dollar issues are going to keep me from attending. Ah, I'm so sorry.
Craig Novak, thanks for your email. Unfortunately, I won't be able to make it in November. I have great memories of Laser and would love to share them. However, my schedule does not allow it. Please keep me informed of future events. Maybe I can make it another time.
Then we have Rob Eden. Sorry, Martin, we cannot commit to being there. If things change, we will make a last-minute booking. But as things stand, it seems unlikely. With best wishes, too.
Chuck Cannon. Sorry, I can't make it. Not enough time to make plans and get passport.
Dave Cheney. Don't believe I will be able to make it all the way from San Francisco.
Yes, those were the Laser people who won't be here, but we can assure you there will be several Laser people attending today.
Yes, and there was an email coming in just 2 days ago, which was from Paul Jackson, who will be there today. He wrote, I was able to speak with Graham. And then we have it about Graham Cook, better known as Mr. World Service Peter Phillips. He is at his home in Kent, and he informed me with regrets that he was not going to be able to attend this weekend. He wished that he could, but he will not be able. Oh well, I tried.
And then, last but not least, we have Chris Kennedy, the brother of Steve Conway, who will tell us about his time on the Ross Revenge later on. Chris Kennedy says, after much thinking and trying, it seems I will be unable to attend this year's Radio Day. I would love to be there. Many friends have contacted me and said that they will meet in Amsterdam on the 14th. I hope I am not letting you all down. It is not in my control. I hope to make it there next year. I have heard that this is a great experience. I hope it all goes very well for all concerned. Thanks again for the invitation and sorry for not being able to attend.
Yeah, and then we have Rob next to us.
Lottery. We have a lottery, €2, and the first prize is a 5 CD box, Motown 1970. Very interesting. And other prizes, books.
Run down at the schedule. After our welcome, we have the AFN presentation with Ingo Paternoster.
let us not forget that later in the afternoon we will have the second Radio Day Awards celebration here, and you can still guess who will be the 6 lucky winners this year. And to conclude the day, we will all be delighted to hear Graham Gill singing his evergreen again. That will be around 5 in the afternoon.
Okay, enjoy the day, and we talk to each other.
So, good afternoon, or good morning, sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a Bavarian passport, or a German passport, that means my normal language is German, and I got thrown out of school in the mid-60s because of my marvelous English, so if you may have some problems understanding me, sorry for that. So, I was given 30 minutes to inform you a little bit about a radio, and now since many years television station, which operates since 66 years here in Europe. Not too much time to talk about 66 years. We make it short, talk a little bit about the AFN radio site. During 1943 and the years later, thousands of American soldiers were moved to Great Britain and stationed there, waiting for the big invasion. They had a lot of spare time in these years, and they were something really missing, information and music from back home. And this was something the BBC Home Service couldn't provide. So General Dwight D. Eisenhower and General George C. Marshall decided after an important meeting to do something in this case. The soldiers first got a regular magazine called the Yank Magazine, a newspaper called the Stars and Stripes, and finally, they got a radio station. So AFN officially opened in July, on July 4th, 1943, broadcasting from a tiny studio at BBC House in London. The station started with the Star Spangled Banner and was heard via 5 50-watt transmitters in US Army camps, but not in London. We have a little film, around 8 minutes, showing you a little bit more on this.
I don't stay out late, don't care to go. I'm home about 8, just me and my radio.
Oh, George.
Yes?
What is that about your radio?
Just me and my radio.
Well, never mind that. Turn it on quickly.
What is it, Gracie?
It's the AFN on the road to Berlin.
Operating the trucks was sometimes dangerous. The first AFN casualty of war, Sergeant Jim McNally, was killed in one of the mobile units when it was strafed by enemy aircraft. The trucks, some operating at 400 watts and others at 1,000 watts, were effective as temporary radio service providers, but fell short of being effective as permanent transmitters.
There wasn't too much local musical shows because the equipment was limited that you could put in the HO-17s. But we got a lot of local information, a lot of local news, because when you were in the front lines, pretty much you didn't know what was going on except what was in front of you. It was especially nice to have that during the Battle of the Bulge because you knew the enemy was on our flank and going to our rear, and it was nice to know that where they were because we didn't want to be cut off. But nevertheless, we got a lot of good information out of it. I was so happy because I was brought up in a radio station, and it made me really feel great empathy with AFN, as did many of the other troops.
Sometimes packing up the units and moving forward took too long. General George S. Patton's Third Army, quickly moving across Europe, did not benefit from AFN services as a result of his army's quick advances. As the war raged on and cities and countries fell to the Allies, AFN moved into more permanent locations, such as the studios in Paris, France.
I went to Paris to help establish an AFN Paris radio station there. And I remember we took over an office that used to be a recording studio. And that became the headquarters for AFN Paris at that time.
Diary. This is your AFN correspondent, Corporal Ken Marvin, speaking to you from somewhere in France.
But permanent studios didn't always mean a cushy desk assignment for the broadcasting soldiers. It was AFN's Josh Logan who came up with the idea to take some of the best-known stars in uniform and send them out to the front lines.
Josh Logan, the director who was in the Army, and had an idea to put 158 men in a Jeep and go out and play to frontline installations and give them a little entertainment amongst, and of course we were all privates, and it wasn't what you call special service. Mm-hmm. We had to clean pots and pans and then still do shows.
A couple of boys wandered up here into AFN studio this afternoon. They're from United States Army Jeep shows. I'd like to have you meet them. PFC Bobby Breen.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, Bob. And PFC Mickey Rooney. Mick, my boy, how are you?
Fine.
You've been doing a heap of entertaining and traveling with those Jeep shows. Tell me about it, will you?
Well, some 53 men that consist of the whole Jeep show company have been touring the different sections of different fronts, Germany, Holland, Luxembourg, and Belgium. We've played to some 700,000 actual combat troops. We're kind of proud of our little organization that this is for ourselves.
Yeah, believe me, that's fine. You've covered many miles in doing this?
Over 91,000 miles, Bob, with all our 12 Jeep shows.
91,000 miles in a Jeep. How is this?
We're a little Jeep happy.
Oh. AFN was soon broadcasting in Germany as Allied forces made their way across the Rhine. AFN's mobile units would find their way into places such as Munich, Würzburg, and Stuttgart. The German army surrendered to the Allies on May 7, 1945. Some soldiers, like Ben Hoberman, knew the end of the war would not be the end of the American Forces Network.
And I remember Johnny Hayes, who I think at that time was probably a colonel, asked me and Bob Light to go to Munich and to build a station and to plan for 20 years in advance. Now, the war was just over, and for somebody to say that to a young kid of 23, I didn't know what he was talking about. But we knew what he meant.
As the war in Europe drew to a close and the mission of the Allied powers turned from war to occupation, the soldiers at AFN waited in the wings, some fully expecting to be sent to the Pacific Theater to help defeat the Japanese. All the while, many were hoping to be sent home.
In about 4 or 5 weeks, there had been rumors that the Japanese were going to surrender. There was almost a rumor a day, but nothing ever happened. And finally, just having been there meaning in Paris, I decided to see if there was some way of confirming the story. So I called the military attaché at the Japanese embassy in Bern, Switzerland, to see if there was any truth to the rumors. I identified myself, the American Forces Network, everything. And I ended up talking with the military attaché in Bern, who spoke perfect Oxford English. And I asked what he knew about the rumors that the Japanese surrendered. And he started to cry. He had just talked with Minister Tojo, the Minister of War in Tokyo, who told him that they were going to surrender. So I thanked him for the information. I hung up the phone, called our London News Bureau, which is where our headquarters were, gave them the story. So AFN was responsible for breaking the actual story of the Japanese surrender.
Let us pray that peace be now restored to the world, and that God will preserve it always.
Thanks from America to all our men in blue, our boys in khaki too, our tough Marines, our Coast Guard, our Army nurses true. We thank you so much. Fellas, this doesn't rhyme, but one of these days soon we'll be seeing you. In the meantime, this is Bob Hope thanking you for those letters to Command Performance, Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. Speaking for everybody on Command Performance and saying the best of the best from the USA. So long.
An American journalist has described AFN as a composite of incredulities. It was an all-American network that couldn't be heard in America.
The numbers of its listening audience were a closely guarded military secret. And although all the broadcasts originated in London, it couldn't be heard on radio sets in the London area. It never had paid commercials, and yet it proudly plugged America's finest product, the well-informed, well-entertained, ready-to-fight American servicemen. That's the way it was in 1943, and that's the way it is today. I'm Gary Bautel. Thanks for joining us.
So Gary Bautel still is working with AFN now in Mannheim, where the headquarters are. He's head of radio news. Well, after France moved out of the NATO many years ago, all AFN stations had to be closed there. Also in Austria, 1955 was the deadline. All AFN stations got out. The Blue Danube Network, as it was called in Austria, went off the air. AFN stayed in Europe, broadcasting from its headquarters in Frankfurt. In earlier years, they used the castle in Höchst, and from several affiliates throughout Germany, Belgium, and Holland. Right after the war, AFN Munich started to broadcast, AFN Stuttgart came, AFN Bremen, where we see some pictures from in a couple of seconds. AFN Bremen moved to Bremerhaven, and AFN Berlin was the first station to go 24 hours around the clock because the so-called Raisin Bombers, who flew food and other things into the city during the Russian blockade, needed the transmitter of AFN for their navigation. The Cold War started in Europe. More American soldiers were moved in and new stations came. AFN Kaiserslautern, still broadcasting today. AFN Nuremberg, the Tower of Power, as they called them. AFN Würzburg, and in the Benelux here, AFN Camp New Amsterdam started to broadcast television in 82. Radio came then in 1986. The station later moved to Soesterberg and was later transferred to the U.S. Air Force, so it was no more an AFN station. AFN Shape started broadcasting in Mons in Belgium in 1974, doing their own programs 24 hours around the clock until December 84, when the station was linked via microwave link to Frankfurt and received radio and television from there. As promised, we show you a couple of pictures from the old years of AFN. We start with two pictures from 1943 done in the studios at BBC House in London. So the next three to come are from AFN Bremen, later AFN Bremerhaven. So this was the AFN studio and this was Bremerhaven until it was closed. Then we go to Berlin. This was done in 1958, this picture. The library. AFN in Frankfurt, in Höchst, he's cutting a record. In these times, these years, they didn't have tape recorders. So every local show, which was aired once or twice per day, news show, was cut on a record first, on a 50-centimeter aluminum record. This was one of the most famous voices, known for his special English, Werner Lamp, doing the weather information. Werner Lamp from Rhein-Main Airways Service. Some of you may remember him. The transmitter of AFN Frankfurt at Weiskirchen, north of Frankfurt, 150 kilowatt medium wave transmitter still working with German tube generators from the Second World War. They are still working. The station can be heard on 806. Nuremberg, downtown, a hotel occupied by the United States Army in the top floor were the studios of AFN Nuremberg. They called themselves the Tower of Power. The station was closed down, I think, in 94. This is AFN Kaiserslautern, or as they call themselves, AFN K-Town. They serve the area of Kaiserslautern, Ramstein, Spangdahlem. most important part for the United States Army, for the United States government in Germany, because this area is the official touchdown area for all airplanes going to the Iraq. They have to go down, be refilled. And in this area, Kaiserslautern in Landstuhl is the biggest military hospital of the United States Army outside of the US. This is live studio in the 80s, still a Gates mixer. Now we are in Würzburg, a station opened in May 1980, closed a couple of years ago. This is in Munich. Shortly before they closed the station, they started to do television. They had television transmitters, of course, rebroadcasting programs which came from Frankfurt, but for 15 minutes per day, they had local news on it. This is the main entrance, the Villa Kaulbach, which was used by the Gestapo during the Second World War. And this is Sergeant Jeff Riley on the last broadcast day, 14th of February, 92. The old studio of AFN Stuttgart. And this is Ed Coleman Barracks, now the main headquarters of AFN in Europe. So, AFN stations, yeah, you know. AFN did, of course, many live programs in the earlier years. Later then, more and more pre-recorded shows came from the United States with well-known American disc jockeys. You know how a 30-centimeter record looks like. But this was one not in the shops. It says Armed Forces Radio. And two of these records were one complete 55-minute radio show. So the two I'm holding here, on one side of both of them is a country show from Gene Price from 1992. And the other side holds two parts of Don Tracy urban music show, also aired in the same time. So all these shows were pre-recorded in the States and sent to AFN stations all over the world. Not these two, Gene Price, Don Tracy, were famous in these years. Jim Pewter, of course, Charlie Tuna, Roland Bynum, Roger Carroll, Pete Smith, Mary Turner doing urban rock, and of course, Wolfman Jack. As the very guarded, very good guarded, and always locked archives at AFN Frankfurt had been finally closed as AFN moved to Mannheim, thousands of shows of these disc jockeys were still in the studio and in the archive I was just talking about. But all the Wolfman Jack shows were gone. Nobody knows where they are. Well, these shows, 55 minute long, were pressed on records. AFN Frankfurt played these shows and sent them by line to affiliates. So AFN Shape, when they aired Charlie Tuna, the record was playing in Frankfurt. Show was on the air at the same time in Bremerhaven, for example. Beside these shows with different music styles, all local AFN stations had, of course, their local shows, mostly in the morning, during afternoon hours. And in the 90s, delivery of these records I showed you just a second ago were stopped. Cassette tapes came then in. Unbelievable. Normal cassette tapes, very noisy, which they used for about 2 or 3 years to play the pre-recorded shows until this complete thing was completely stopped. Satellite technology was gone so far that more and more programs could be sent over by satellite to Europe. Well, besides these shows I showed you here, AFN got, of course, every week new records with the actual pop songs on it. They were all pressed on records like this, especially made for AFN. So AFN never played a 17-centimeter single or a 7-inch centimeter single, for example. This was later, of course, changed over to CD. Now, AFN was in its earlier years only a medium wave station. In the 70s and 80s, Stuttgart, Berlin, and Frankfurt started FM outlets with automated music, so-called elevator music. They ran for some years. Some of the stations also offered in the evening hour special programs like soul or classic rock. All these FM stations were got together in the 90s, and they became the so-called ZFM network. The Z stood for Zoo. Remember, American radio stations, if you go to Chicago, for example, you have 43 different radio stations, 43 different programs. AFN had two channels, so they had to form a program to satisfy every musical taste. So on ZFM, day over programs were done in Frankfurt for all stations, mostly done live during night hours, and in the weekend, AFN took over and still does take over ready-made shows from the United States. Live done, neutral, without any station call in it. So here's a little film I did in 1993 at the ZFM studios in Frankfurt. You will see Air Force Sergeant Andrew Janicek, who was the military head of broadcasting in this year, and he's still a good friend of mine.
The best American music in the country, AFN Country Roads.
Right, we've chosen the rock service for midnight to 5.
Mm-hmm.
So those 5 hours are satellite fed from the U.S. A person specialized in blues, however, that's pre-recorded from the U.S. and piped in from the U.S. too.
Oh, yeah.
Some of those shows originate from the U.S., but they're sent to us on vinyl albums,
mm-hmm.
and we play the show on vinyl or CD. Like American Top 40 comes to us on CDs. And each CD is worth an hour, and we play the CD for each hour. Hour 1, 2, 3, 4 of American Top 40. So, but that's actually being played here. But a lot of people think it's coming live from the U.S. So they call us and say, "Can I talk to Shadow Stevens?" When Shadow Stevens is, you know, is a pre-recorded show.
This is Studio G. This is the studio we do all of our live broadcasting from for talk shows. AFN has a program called Open Line. In here we've got the capability of taking two lines at any one time, putting them on the air and letting them talk. It's not as neat as it is maybe in some commercial stations where they can stack phone calls, but this is the most flexible studio that we have that can take two phone calls. We can put them on the air, and through the use of our magical digital delay, we can delay people by 4 seconds. So if they say something bad, like shit or anything like that, we can dump that 4 second loop of audio off the air and come back to a delayed status. Once that 4 seconds is dumping off air, the curse word is gone, and we just flick the switch and lose that phone caller altogether. Otherwise, this studio is pretty well an all-rounded production studio. We've got 5 cartridge machines, 2 Denon CD players with a regular Studer CD player. But the latest thing we've got, and let me get the microphone out of the way, is right here. It is the Audio Vault. We can take all of these tapes right here and throw them in the trash, because digitally we can now record all of that audio into the Audio Vault and access it through the simple use of a mouse. If you're familiar with Windows, man, you can do anything by one pot in the Audio Vault. You can access any amount of audio that we have in there, and you can set up a menu and through one source continue to run audio all day long. You can't beat it. In the back we've got a couple of reel-to-reels too. Some regular high-quality Studers, German of course, and the second one, the first two are two-track, the other one in the far corner is a four-track, and we use that for our automation for weekend programming. For example, we get in Mary Turner, we get Dr. Demento, it's all on record, and we can't run records on our automation system, so we have to transfer it from a turntable onto a four-track reel-to-reel, and then put that on our reel-to-reels for automation. And we can let it sit there forever, really, but it sits there for maybe about 12 hours, and then a computer automatically starts that reel-to-reel and puts it on our transmitter. So this is probably the most used piece of equipment that we have in the studio, and the most important, because it allows us to run unmanned programming on the weekends so that people can have some sort of a social life. That's it. And song, I played that little crescendo again at the end of that song, and it was perfect. It was a perfect transition from that one song, I think it was Phil Collins, into the spot break. While I was doing that, spots were playing, and through the audition bus at the same time, I was recording spots that I needed that he had in the next studio. So In a matter of 2 minutes, I recorded off spots that I needed digitally into the computer and handed him back his tape. The neat thing about this whole thing is that once the spots are loaded into here, it's on one hard drive, he can be playing the same spot that I'm playing in here and that they're playing in there. The audio vault evidently can play the same audio bit in three different studios. And that's the wonderful thing about it. All of us can access the main database and access the same audio all at the same time simultaneously.
I want you to stay tuned because we have a look at your weather. And let me see, Joshua Caddison coming up next.
Countdown. Saturday at noon.
Anyway, what are you
ZFM
videotaping?
You can catch it again Saturday evenings at 7:05 on the Power Network.
He's been our decade shows, and so in order to show our thanks to him, we give him free access to the building and let him bring his video camera in and schmooze with him as much as possible. Buy him beer.
Pretty cool. Really has some interesting footage.
Unreliable, because once we went to 24 hours a day on during Desert Storm, they started messing up by the numbers.
They get hot.
Yeah,
they would get hot and they would re-cue your song with something else. So
for us, we went to Denon's and our reliability increased 100%. You know, very rarely do we screw up. We have CD errors, jock errors, but very rarely a Denon unit error. Very rarely.
More CDs.
It's expensive though.
More CD errors or more jock errors?
Same amount of jack errors.
As always.
But obviously between 3 and 6 in the evening we have no jack errors.
None.
Is Coke allowed in the studio? Is Coke allowed in the studio?
Not if you're snorting it.
So this was filmed in 1993.
July of 1945, the American troops came to Berlin.
Oh, we have to stop this, please.
This
is the next film. Just to remember, AFN was and is still a military radio station. Who listened to AFN, or who's listening today? Well, of course, the official audience, members of the United States Army, their families, because AFN is still here for them, for their need of information, and of course, for their requests. AFN played also requests for German and other non-American listeners, members of the so-called Silent Listeners Group. There have been millions of people here in Europe eager to adopt American music and culture. AFN did regularly research, but never told officially how many non-Americans were listening to AFN in Europe. The 90s saw the fall of the Iron Curtain and the political situation changed, and a lot of American soldiers left Germany, went home, or a station in Bosnia-Hungary or the Kosovo. AFN Munich closed on the 14th of February, 92. AFN Bremerhaven on the 31st of March, 93. AFN Berlin followed on the 15th of July, 1994. Also, Nuremberg and Würzburg were shut down, and just a couple of weeks ago, AFN Heidelberg was closed and is moving back to Stuttgart. Now a film, a short one from AFN Berlin, shortly before they closed. We see the station manager, Greg Foss, a civilian.
August of 1945, July of 1945, the American troops came to Berlin. They decided they needed to set up a radio station. They looked around for some quarters to use, a building to use. Originally they had looked at the Wannsee, you know where the Wannsee Recreation Center is? They had looked at that. And then it was too much damage there, and so they found this place, which was the von Ribbentrop residence, and so they took that and used that. And we stayed there from 1945 until 1978. One of them acted like we're doing that two-hour radio history program. We had to play a lot of stuff from the old big transcription discs. So this is the last one in existence, I think. There's one in Frankfurt in their display that they had. But everything else is digital, push-button, slide-controlled. A lot different than when I first got here back in 1977. We were still using some of the old stuff that I think they used when they first went on the air in 1940. All the equipment that we were getting in, we use American Standard video, which is NTSC. So everything we were getting in was 110 volts, 60 cycles, 60 hertz. So it was fine. We, you know, it's very easy to convert the 220 down to 110. But the problem was getting the hertz converted from 50 to 60, boosting them up. So that's what all these were. This, of course, is Sergeant George Hudak. He's very famous here in Berlin. He did a program called Frolic at 5. He was only here for 3 years. But the man, it was right in the middle of rock and roll. And we talked earlier about rock and roll and what an influence that played on German listeners. AFN and BFBS were the only place young German kids could listen to rock and roll in the 1950s and early 60s. German radio did not play it. George came in. He was one of those hyper disc jockeys that was, say, this goes out for Bobby and Billy and Betty and Sue and Tommy and whatever. And he just played all that music. And he became popular. He was so popular that there was a place down here called the Jazz Killer on Breitenbachplatz. They had a mural with his picture on the wall. And it was there through the 1970s. It was still on the wall. George died back in the early 80s. He died of a heart attack. He was the president of Pacific Airways out in San Francisco. This was the guy who was doing a live newscast, and they went out. It was snowing outside, and they went out and they got real snow, and they dumped it on him from up on the ceiling while he was doing the newscast. Live to you on AM. Because that's run by this computer, these two computers over here. Get the signal in from Frankfurt. They use a tone. Tone comes up the line. It tells it to fire off this cart, this cart, this cart. Yeah. And then if all of a sudden they get a 10 seconds worth of dead air, in other words, everything goes dead for about 10 seconds, then it automatically kicks into one of these recorded, and we'll continue on. And there's over, I think we can go 3 days with this without repeating, with all these tapes that are on back, forth, around, and through. So it does more. But this is something I found. These are the Vietnam era sound time cards. Time, in other words, you're listening to AFRS radio, and the time is 15 hours. Mm-hmm. We're in the process of, we found those back in the thing, and the engineer was playing them for me and trying to show me, but we had some little problems with them, and I don't know how to get it without getting it on the air. So, he can check any of the studios, he can check anything else that's going on in this whole area. He can bring in the television studio. A month or so ago, we did a special television program on the drawdown. We brought in some of the head guys of the command here and brought them in to talk about drawdown. Well, we wanted to do a television program, but they also wanted to get it on radio, so we just simulcast the program, and it was very easy to do. So, very well designed here. I think that's full control from 3 until 6, and it's a wonderful little thing. Plus, we have the what's called the super scheduler, which allows him to go in and look up any CD title that he needs, and within 10 seconds he'll have it and where it's located at.
The American Forces Network Europe.
So for all the technicians, radio and television news, most of this equipment we just saw there in Berlin.
Most of this equipment is wrecked. It was supposed to be sold via the property disposal store of the United States Army. They sent everything to Frankfurt, placed it outside of the building in AFN Frankfurt, and forgot it there. It's Army. Never forget it. Well, AFN Frankfurt was the AFN Europe headquarters for many years. Then the Army moved out of Frankfurt. AFN stayed there for many years until 2004. Moved then to Coleman Barracks in Mannheim. We saw pictures. And it seems like the same game is played there. The Army plans to move out of Coleman Barracks, so AFN would still stay there in one building and everything else will be empty. AFN runs still, beside television, of course, its medium wave stations today, used mostly as an information source. It airs nearly the complete day National Public Radio, which is relayed from the United States. ZFM, as a name for the FM programs, is gone. The station is called now the Eagle. This change of name came with the Second Irish War. They provide a lot of programming with just music done live at the studios in Mannheim. Television, very shortly, AFRTS or AFN delivers several television programs for its viewers, but it's not possible for us as Europeans to watch that. They are on Eutelsat 2 and have a very good decoder system. I heard from people who tried to hack this, no chance. AFN still operates in Germany today, AFN Stuttgart, just mentioned that, AFN Kaiserslautern. Then AFN Bavaria, which served the North Bavarian training district at Grafenwöhr, where the United States government spent millions of dollars during the last years. Then AFN Hessen is working as a small station, AFN Shape, in Belgium at NATO headquarters, of course. Most of the AFN stations are today outside of Germany, in Bosnia, in Hungary, in Turkey, in Italy, where a couple of stations are working. But all these stations get their programs either direct from the United States or via AFN Europe in Mannheim. AFN does not play a big role for German listeners anymore today, also not for Dutch listeners or Belgium listeners. There is too many other radio on the market. AFN loses military audience too. Some of you may have read this article of Hans in Freewave a couple of months ago. Most of the American soldiers are young people. They got their iPods, their MP3 players, and they tune in to listen to the news or watch the news on television, and then they turn the radio off. So, that's it. We close this with a promo from, I think, 1995. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if this is still working. Yeah? But that's in a relay of AFN Shape and relays local programming from Shape. Yeah. Okay. So we end this presentation with a promo from AFN. And if you're interested, a couple of years ago I had the chance to do with a historian who was the man who officially had the order to keep the history of AFN in the book, which never comes out because there is nobody who wants to finance this project. We produced a CD which came out in 2003 with a couple of recordings of these years. Some of them are left and they are sold at RUPS. So thank you very much. If you have any questions, I will be around here. You can ask me. Maybe I can help you because I was given 30 minutes and I think I'm in the limit. So, please.
The American Forces Network Europe, your primary source of radio and television news and entertainment.
Thank you.
Serving U.S. service members and their families stationed across the European command. AFN Radio's Morning News Watch, weekday mornings from 6 to 9.
Morning News Watch time now, 8:39 Central European time.
News and information you need to start your day.
Quickly, we have a news update for you. A Kosovo Albanian and a British journalist have been killed.
Powerful, fast, accurate, and theater-wide.
It's by far the most serious spillover incident in 2 weeks.
AFN Morning News Watch. AFN Newsline.
Bringing you more news more often. This is AFN Newsline. I'm Specialist Dave Grimm.
Brief, specially tailored news and information bits.
Despite the rough weather, CTAF soldiers train with the M203 grenade launcher.
Health, family, and lifestyle issues during Oprah.
Students and speakers began to check in, finding out where specific career day presentations would be held.
Military and European news, plus weather, weekdays at 1:25. European currency exchange rates are in the one-minute break during Jeopardy. European command news at 5:55 during headline news.
Yesterday's shell fire incident killed at least two civilians.
Many of the AFN affiliates provide local news weekday evenings at 6:55.
Good evening, I'm Sergeant Daniel.
In prime time, AFN delivers two-minute UCOM and local news breaks. And at 10:23, a five-minute UCOM and an AFN local news break. AFN, your source for fast, accurate information. Our command information products are created with you and your staff.
If you have a message for your audience, we're here for you. AFN can target your local community or the entire European audience. The Network Operations Center is the engine that keeps the information flowing throughout the U.S. European Command. If you have a problem receiving a quality signal from AFN, our technicians offer one-to-one expertise through the AFN trouble number. AFN technicians keep the radio and television signals on the air all day, every day. 17 AFN affiliate stations across the U.S. European Command, standing ready to satisfy your local command information needs. From weather announcements,
the roads in the Baumholder area are snow covered and slick.
School closings,
we need to let you know that schools in the Baumholder area are delayed 2 hours.
For information about the latest community theater stage production, AFN is your tool to get out information that impacts your local community. Since 1943, the American Forces Network Europe, serving the U.S. European Command.